people and places. With your host, Brad Banjor, Pete Shapouris, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast. Presented by Mothers, Polishes, Waxes, Cleaning, Replay XD Cameras, Kicker Audio.
You know what? We've got something really special on this edition of Shift and Steer, and it means that we got Pete Shapouris back with us.
Hey,
out of my wheelchair.
Welcome back, my man.
Hey, well, it's good to be back.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. In fact, I'm doing so good, I can't even explain how good I'm doing.
That's awesome. Well, you're running around. And if you haven't been listening, Pete had knee surgery.
Yes.
And he's been down for the count for a little while, but he's here. He's back. And hopefully we're going to get you on the rest of these episodes that we keep cranking out.
I know.
Because we can't control Aaron without you.
I know. Oh, Aaron. Poor Aaron.
Poor Aaron. You haven't been listening to the last episode,
I'm talking about controlling Aaron.
Hey, Pete, seriously, it is great to have your voice back on the show and have all your insight and your hot rod wisdoms, because it's great. But today we are at Pomona Fairgrounds, the Street Machine and Muscle Car Nationals.
Let's keep that straight.
Presented by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Yes, sir.
And we're lucky enough to have our friend with us today, aren't we?
Yes.
Alex Exadius.
Yes.
How are you today, Alex?
I'm doing very well, and it's good to see Pete back on his feet, I'll tell you. He was hurting pretty bad, but he's back, and he's the same old guy he's always been. So welcome back, Pete.
Well, in addition to that, we also have Matt DeAndrea. Matt, good to have you.
Hello.
Yeah, and missing link is Aaron Hagar.
Yeah, Aaron's not with us this time. He's got a cold. He's sick. Actually, Aaron is sick, and he's stuck up in Tahoe.
Yeah.
We'll get him back soon.
He did give it a good try. He said he was going to try and make it down, and it was just last night. He goes,
I told him no. I was like, I don't want to get sick, so you got to stay
I know. That's what I said. I said, you're going
to
come down and use the mics.
We won't be able to do this again if everybody's getting sick. But you know, look, he's going to be back soon. It's great. We're here, like you said, in Pomona. And just out of the blue, the heat came out. It is hot out.
It's summer.
Yeah, it really got hot out. But at least we got a nice location.
We have a double crowd this time from last year. It's amazing.
I'm telling you. At least we
just talked to Jim Henwood, who's the president of the Fairplex, and their numbers are double. He is over the top. It's amazing.
I mentioned to Matt when we were walking around, I said, I come to this fairgrounds, as we all do, for so many events, L.A. Roadster Show, the Grand National Roadster Show. It's different to see muscle cars driving around out here. You know?
It's really fun. The driving around part is the best part.
Yeah.
It's very impressive for us because they generously donate funds from this show to the Alex Exidius School. So
tell us about that, because last year I heard was a really big success. It almost surprised you.
Oh.
40 grand. Yeah,
that's great.
Really surprises. Oh, it means so much to the kids. By the way, the Alex Exidius School is really a high school auto shop where the kids from the local schools can come over and get credited in their school for graduation. And it doesn't cost them anything. We do it all by donations from people like the Peterson Foundation and the LA Roadster Show group and all kinds of GM. A lot of people donate money to the school. And now we're going to be able to move into a building five times bigger than what we have. It's just been great to see these kids graduate. And they all get a job when they graduate. We've been very fortunate with that.
Now, Alex, you've been coming to this fairgrounds probably for so many shows, and what's the most notable thing? I mean, now you're a celebrity. You're here signing autographs at the SoCal Speed Shop booth, and people are coming up because you've done so much for our hobby, but what's the most noticeable thing that I think that you could say the cars? What's the biggest difference in cars?
Well, going back a little further, we raced out there on that drag strip here at Pomona back in the 50s, so we go back here a long, long way before they had car shows here or anything. But the car show thing is so wonderful, and this to see this one grow is very exciting because muscle cars are an important part of our industry.
Yeah, I mean, it's that growth from the factory cars. I mean, Matt, you're out driving, you know, Hellcats and things like that, and those will be the muscle cars of tomorrow that, that guys are collecting and like that.
Yeah, right on. But the collection of cars that are out here now are pretty impressive, and you know this move toward, I'll say pro touring, but I don't want to pigeonhole all the cars into pro touring, but just taking an older car, a hot rod or a muscle car, and just making it a little more livable, a little more drivable.
More drivable, yeah.
You know, like putting air conditioning in it and making it safer with brakes and making the interior comfortable.
Brakes are good.
Is the trend now. But there's more companies available in the aftermarket to make that kind of stuff happen. And you can see it, all these cars here. Like, most of these cars here aren't trailered here. I mean, there's a few gassers that are trailered here because those things are ridiculous, especially on the street. But these guys come out here, they drive their car here, they get out on the autocross, they race them, they show them, they drive them home.
You know, you hit it on the head, because the thing is I know Pete and I have had this conversation about how over the years, muscle cars, they've always had lots of horsepower. It's always been about that. But now you can get in them and enjoy driving them because they don't drive you. You can actually point them in the direction you want.
Yeah, the autocross for me is the big change. Last year, I was absolutely blown away by it. I mean, I had, you watch it on TV, you see it in the magazines, but until you're on the K-rail and watching it happen for real, it just turned me 180 degrees. I was just absolutely blown away by it.
And it provides a wonderful soundtrack
to this
car show as you're out there walking around eating your 14-inch hot dogs and 22-inch diameter pizza slices.
Yeah, five deep watching that go. I mean, it was just.
Yeah. Oh, they're doing the burnout contest out there, too, which is.
Don't forget the giant turkey legs.
That's right, the giant turkey legs.
Oh, you're talking. Oh, yeah.
We're talking.
Dietary cuisine here.
That's right.
Not too far from the fair.
Right on.
Now, Alex, the people that come up and talk to you, I mean, you get such a range. I was watching the autographs over there. Little kids that know you from kind of the current SoCal Speed Shop, and then people that walk up and they reintroduce themselves. That's got to be a kick.
One of the experiences I've had over the years is when I'm signing a belly tank poster, and I'm explaining to the young kid with his dad, there was a P-38 fuel tank, and we made a car out of it. And then I look up and realize his dad doesn't know what I'm talking about.
Exactly. you're like telling it so the dad can tell him later on. Well, wait a minute, I got to educate dad here.
That's right. I mean, he was born after the war, so
yeah,
he doesn't know anything. But it's fun to see the young people. I've noticed a lot of young people here today. A lot of young people are into the muscle cars.
There's a lot of dark hair here. Yeah, I'm very excited.
Just hair in general.
No, I'm telling you, that's what I look for when I go to these events. Dark hair. We need dark hair. It's good.
Well, they're right here today. I'm telling you, a lot of young people are here today.
Yeah, it's good. A lot of families, a lot of little kids.
Yep.
I think the thing about Alex is not only is he a pioneer of the hobby, but he continues on with with what you're doing here with the Alex Sigdadius. What's the official name, Pete? Help me.
Oh, Alex.
It's the Alex Sigdadius Center for the Automotive Arts. He made that up.
Okay.
So it's a little pretentious, but you know, with the Peterson donation and everything, it's not as pretentious as it was. We're going to reach that goal. We really are.
That's fantastic. I mean, but what you're doing, you're giving back. And I mean, that's what's so awesome, because it's you helped pioneer it, and now you're going full circle, and you're right there making sure the next generation is coming through.
We want to get it to the point where it's like the Pasadena Art Center. Not take away from that.
Oh, I thought you meant a big campus up in the hills of Pasadena.
We're going to have a campus.
You're
here.
You're going to charge people $100,000 a year?
The gentleman that I'd introduced you to earlier, Mr. Henwood, he wants a campus here.
That's
and
fantastic.
We've got 800 acres here.
Wow.
I mean, that's where it's headed. And we are accumulating the money through the Peterson and all these other wonderful philanthropic organizations. It's going to happen. It's happening right now.
That'd be great, Professor Shapores.
Well,
I'll tell you. And that's what.
It's Dean Shapores.
And the whole plan is that I'm being selfish because I need the help at my company.
Yeah.
We don't have help.
You need to cultivate, guys.
We don't have the help. We want the help. We need the help. I need 10 benders. You know? Everybody that's any good's got a job.
No, you're right.
I'm going to go back to the auto shop part of this thing. If I hadn't gone to the auto shop at Fairfax High School in Hollywood when I was a kid, I probably wouldn't have become a hot rodder. And then I wouldn't have been able to enlist in the service as an airplane mechanic with the Air Corps. And then I certainly would have started SoCal Speed Shop. So the auto shop is so important to young men, and they don't have them anymore, and now we offer them one. Tuition free.
What you're doing is fantastic for everyone, and that's what's so great. And Alex, we know you got a whole bunch of people that want to get your autograph, and you've got a schedule, but thank you so much for taking your time and coming out here and being on Shift and Steer.
Well, thank you so much. I listen to the show, and it's great listening to you guys, and thanks for letting me be part of it.
Hey, right. Thank you. Anytime.
Thanks,
you know that. You have an open invitation.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
Well, we're going to keep moving along. We've got all these people out here. I see Joe Benson out here in the crowd. I see the guys from MagnaFlow and Hotchkiss, and we've got all kinds of people. Our next guest is Alan Grant. Now, Alan Grant is a world champion driver and worked for the Shelby factory back in the original days. And
you just made him sound really old. Good job. Good job, Brad.
Okay.
We were talking earlier with you about your history at Shelby. Tell us a little bit about that here on the air.
Yes, I was very fortunate. I originally went to work for Carroll as a welder.
Did you right up on the mic there?
Okay, is that better?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're real directional. Go ahead. Go ahead. Keep talking. I'll get you adjusted.
All right.
There you go, buddy.
Actually, I went down to Shelby American because I had raced 1 year in AC Bristol. And had done very well. And so then I went back to college, and during semester break, I went down and offered my services as a driver. And he kind of looked at me, and he says, have you ever raced before? Well, that was the wrong question. I told him about every race I ever won. And he said, well, Alan, he said, I got Phil Hill and Dan Gurney. He said, I really don't need any drivers right now, but yeah. We're looking for welders. Can you weld? And it's really ironic, because I was just talking with Alex earlier about Phil Remington. Phil Remington was the chief engineer, and without Phil Remington, there would not have been a Shelby American, because he was that good, and we were sharing the talent that man had. Anyhow, bottom line, I went to work as a welder, and then a couple weeks later, because I wanted to work in a race car shop, they moved me over to the race car shop, and ended up as a production control manager upstairs.
So you came in as a welder, you were telling us earlier, and you wanted to be a racer, but you got to work your get to earn your creds, right?
That's it. It's it's really kind of ironic. You know, when Carol said to me, he said, Alan, he says, you come to work, you know, as a welder, and when I need a driver, I'll give you a chance. And I said, awesome. Well, once I got into the race car shop, he told that to almost everybody that was working there.
that was his get you in the door. So give us a little insight, because I know what I want to hear, because, you know, we see the pictures and, you know, what was it really like? Because now we know that Shelby is this, you know, this legendary company, and, you know, Carroll was, you know, so famous in all of motorsports. But what was it like? Was it more like just another hot rod shop? I mean, because back in the day, sure, Carroll was doing stuff with Ford, but it wasn't really thought of as, we're going to build this legendary company, was it? I mean, or was it just another race shop?
Actually, what it was a bunch of Southern California hot rodders that Carroll Shelby, you know, with his dream to build a sports car. And he wouldn't say sports car, he said sport car. You know, that was his famous saying. And so he gathered together a team of really Southern California hot rodders, you know, and Phil Remington, you know, just led the brigade. And he knew the guys that were talented and could fabricate and could weld like you can't believe. And so consequently, we were just, you know, in fact, the Southern California hot rodders, they really kind of looked down a little bit on us sporty car guys, you know, because that was kind of a little bit sissy. But all of a sudden, you know, we took this car and we started winning races. In fact, one of the first races was right here in Pomona.
Really?
And I don't know if they still have road races here or not, but it was
Davey. They don't, but the track is still here, and it sure would be fun to relive some of it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be great.
In fact, I was here as a mechanic with Davey McDonald and Ken Miles, and so it was an awesome time.
Well, you know, one thing I want to know is they've got a huge collection of Shelby-built cars back here in the back of the building here, Building 4, where we're at here in Pomona. Were any of those cars, can you point to any of those cars and say, oh, yeah, my hand was on that, I welded on that one, or all of them, or what?
In fact, the most valuable one there was the first race car, and I was waiting for the Daytona Coupes to come in, and so they were just kind of putting me on little jobs here and there. Well, the first race car that came in, it was my job to strip it of all the chrome and different things that weren't necessary. In fact, I still have the gas cap off the very first car because I took it off, threw it in my toolbox, you know, and I still have it.
That's cool.
Now, when you were at Shelby for a while, you were just sharing an office with Pete Brock.
Correct.
Yeah, so...
Oh, that's another guy.
Yeah, and these names, right?
Oh, my God.
What's it like to share an office with Brock?
Peter Brock is an awesome guy, and like I say, we shared an office, and it was right next door to Carroll Shelby's. And, of course, the doors were normally over and open. And one thing I learned a lot from Carroll Shelby, he could tell when he was pissed off because, man, he got loud. And he learned a bunch of whole new vocabulary from him. And but Peter Brock, I mean, to sit there and to literally watch him create on paper, you know, these cars, you know, the Daytona Coupe, it was just absolutely incredible. But Pete is just a downright nice guy, and I'm so pleased to see him getting the credit that he truly deserves. So, because he and Shelby had a little falling out there, and it was hard to get anything good and from about Peter, but because of Carroll, unfortunately. But Peter now, he deserves every bit of credit he's getting.
Peter's book is really a good read.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It's really good. So.
Well, you know, we're kind of winding things up here, Alan, but what I want to know is you told Matt and I the story about you couldn't get that place in the seat from Carroll, so how did you go about getting on the track in a Shelby?
Well, once they moved me upstairs, part of my job was to sell cars to our dealers, and I had a big dealer in Walnut Creek, California, and they called up and they wanted to buy a race car. Well, we were to actually take and run the cars, you know, five or six races, and then bring them in, rebuild them, and sell them to privateers. And so I had one left. And so when they called up and wanted to buy a race car, I said, well, I've only got one left. I'll sell it to you under one condition. And it got real quiet, and you know, they said, well, what's that? And I said, I drive it. And, boy, it really got quiet. And so finally, you know, said, have you ever raced before? And, again, I let them know how good I was, you
That's
know.
Right.
And so, anyhow, long story short, I said, furthermore, I said, I need you to put up an extra $1,000 because I want to build a special engine because I'm going to blow the factory team off. Well, that really got him excited.
Yeah. I just want to hear about how you build an engine for only $1,000.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
can't do that anymore.
I was working for $2 an hour at Shelby, so
that's right.
1963.
And you could buy a Shelby Cobra for how much back then?
$6,000.
$6,000. Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Which was a ton of bread.
So how'd the racing go, by the way?
It was really a lot of fun. In fact, the car is very distinctive. It's bright yellow with black stripes that go across the hood and back in a 45-degree angle with a black meatball on it. And it was considered one of the prettiest race cars. And the guy that designed that scheme was George Lucas. And George and I grew up together in Modesto, California, and we belonged to the same sports car club. And when I started racing the AC Bristol, he went to every single race with me. So he came down, slept on my couch, and he actually designed that paint scheme, and we wanted it yellow because the factory cars at the time were black and dark blue, and they had Hallebrand wheels, but they were just anodized. They weren't polished out. So we said, we got to have a car that really stands out in the crowd. So we picked yellow, not any yellow, DuPont tinting yellow, and with the black stripes and the whole works, and so it really stood out.
Where's that car today, Alan?
That car is in the Miller Motorsports collection in Salt Lake City.
Okay.
Chassis 2128. It sold in 2004. Russo Steel sold it for $2.2 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now it's probably worth probably 15 to 20.
And it's got a $1,000 motor in it.
That's right.
Yeah.
I won't tell anybody that. We won't tell anybody.
Well, Alan, we appreciate you coming on. I mean, these are the kind of stories. And everybody, we're going to post some photos that Alan's going to forward to me of this actual car, of him racing it back in the day. And I looked at them on his phone. They're so cool. So you're going to want to go to our Facebook page and check those out at Shift and Steer, actually Shift Steer Media on Facebook, and see those. But we got more people, so don't go away because we've got more coming up. I think we got John Hotchkiss standing out there because he's out here. And Alan, thank you so much for coming on today. It's Alan Grant, world champion driver, and these great stories about the Carroll Shelby factory and the racing team back in the day. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Alan. Have fun at the show.
You, thank you. I am having fun.
Hey, and thanks for hanging around waiting for us.
My pleasure.
All righty. And thank you. So,
nice to meet you.
That's an incredible story. I mean, to be able to have that time at Shelby and to work with Pete Brock and then to get involved with the racing and stuff like that is incredible. And I don't know what it would have been like to have been there at that time, but I would imagine it's kind of like a hot rod shop, like today,
hey,
just
Gino,
kind of moving along and building those kind of cars. It's very, very cool stuff. So here we go.
Hey,
we got John Hotchkiss coming up here. John,
you see my hat off.
You got a nice tan. Today. You got a nice tan this morning out there.
Oh, man, it is brutal. It's hot out there.
It is hot, right? Yeah.
So just to remind everybody, we're in Pomona, California at the West Coast Street Machine and Muscle Car Nationals, and Hotchkiss, they came out and they set up a mean autocross course out here. Got a bunch of guys. So, John, you're out there kind of running the show. How many cars do you have out there today?
It looks like we'll have about 75 cars today and probably the same tomorrow.
Really?
And what is so cool about this, you know, we've all been in the parts business and bolt on this, but hey, we say put it on the car and get out there and drive it, because get out of the stands, get out of the show field, and you can always display your car. But we have a 69 C10 long bed stock. We've got Subarus, Honda Civics. We have
I saw some piece of shit out there running around. I'm not gonna lie to you. I saw some.
Did you see that Mopar? That 74 Mopar.
I think I saw a video of it already, like on Instagram or something. Maybe from you guys posted. I was like, what is that crap? What kind of show is going on over there?
Oh, that car is rusty and it's cornering on its tires.
Somebody was having
letters.
Fun though. Somebody was having a lot of fun in that thing. Oh, some car just got very angry in here.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one of those guys with an El Camino, you might know.
Yeah.
But, hey, we're having just a great time getting people out driving, and we're giving rides, and you can hear the screams all the way around the course.
I think what you're doing is the cornerstone of the future of what the sport's all about. I mean, not just this. I'm talking about the whole thing, the aftermarket, of being able to go out and do this. I mean, it's like what goes on at SEMA. It's all happening outside.
It really is. And remember when we were all in this years ago? I mean, you could get an El Camino cheap. And, you know, hey, I got a $1,200 El Camino, and I'm bringing it home. I'll put some paint and a crate motor in it. It'll be really good. But, you know, now it's like 20 grand for just a piece of junk.
I was coming down here this morning, and there was a guy in an El Camino in front of me. And it wasn't all, you know, I mean, it had some tires on it, but it wasn't. And it had to have an LS3 in it or something, right? And the guy was just scooting. And the car was beautiful. But I don't mean, like, it wasn't all slammed. And it was done very, very nicely. And I was just getting a kick out of him going through traffic. Boop, 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 you know.
Yeah, there's no more going 55 at 5,500 RPM.
Yeah.
Now
there,
it's
there
cruising.
There was no power glide in this one. It was,
right.
It was really great.
So we were saying before as well is the autocross event is providing the soundtrack for the entire
the whole
show outside.
I think it's the best.
Hear it and see it and smell it and see what's going on out there.
Yeah,
John. But you guys are also the title sponsor for the autocross event, so you have a whole series of autocross events where just on the West or all
over
the country.
No, we're doing 10 events this year. We've signed up to do 10 autocrosses. We'll do all the Street Machine and Muscle Car National events. It's Minnesota and Springfield, Illinois, and everything that they have. Then we do NMCA. We'll do four Fontanas, and we'll go to Commerce, Georgia, and do the Chevrolet Performance Nationals, and we'll do Carlisle Mopar. And then by then, it'll be November, and we'll just say, what in the heck did we just do?
That's right. So what are the qualifications to bring a car out here and do it? You just need like a tank of gas, four tires, and a helmet?
Tank of gas, four tires, and a helmet. We give a tech form, and you go through the tech and make sure the battery's tied down and the car's not leaking and exhaust is tight and steering and so on. And it's pretty much self that we do low-speed autocross. So, you know, it's probably 45, 50 miles an hour is the fastest somebody can go here. But you can scare the life out of yourself at 35
around
the corner. And so so anyway, it's a tech forum. We look at the cars, but really you just bring a car out here, bring a helmet and some enthusiasm.
Now, if you're just a straight-up rookie and you've never done it before, is this an event you should come to? Do you guys have anybody out there that maybe gives some tips or does ride-alongs, or should somebody get a little more experience before start going to your autocross series?
No, Matt, that is absolutely a great point. We make this for novices. We want brand-new people. We want to get people that have a culture of, hey, I want to try that. So we're giving demo rides. We're giving we get people out there, and we talk about they've never driven before. We say go around and do three slow laps, you know, your first three laps, and then, but I'll tell you, the brand new people, they'd get about four corners and then they stand on it.
Having fun. Right. Yeah, you get very confident very quickly, because you're gonna hit a cone. That's it, you're gonna hit a cone. Now, did you bring the Hotchkiss taxi?
We did not, and actually we're building a new Hotchkiss taxi.
Yes. This thing was badass. It was a four-door, you can explain it better than I can, but it was a four-door car painted up like a taxi with like four race seats in it.
We did a satellite with 440. It was pretty cool with four race seats in it, and we put GoPros inside, and we had the, just to give people the sensation of what it's like, and you know, when you can take three people around at a time, you can move a
that's
crowd.
That's awesome. That's right. Yeah, that's great.
With Disney,
that's a great idea.
Yeah, the Hotchkiss taxi. It'll look great because it was painted up like a taxi, people were getting great rides.
Well, it was the rides that were going on at SEMA, the screamers, man. It was just so cool to hear people just...
Well, I heard the rumor that you have to build a new one because now you're farming that out as an Uber car.
Exactly.
People show up in L.A. and, what's this?
A Hotchkiss Uber.
Yes, yeah. And then you see how much it costs in your American Express.
Yes, exactly.
That's Super right. Uber.
So about 75 cars, and you said this is your first time you guys have actually done the event series.
This is it's the first time we've really been with this group, the Street Machine group, but we did it. We've done, oh gosh, we've been an event company for years. Doing
well, you've been doing them at Fontana and like that,
exactly.
Yeah.
And but we wanted to go where the crowd is and really get a place where there's tons of enthusiasts. And we, you know, the bleachers are packed, and around the K-rail, the autocross is crowded. So this is it's where the action is.
Oh.
Probably one of the best things about it is there's nothing worse than going to a big fairgrounds like this and just seeing everybody sitting next to their car and the car just sitting idle. You know, here, they're cruising around. Then you go over there, and like Matt said, it's the soundtrack. You hear the screeching tires. You hear, so just everybody kind of goes over there like a big magnet's pulling them over.
Yeah,
exactly. And we're also doing, we've got some great sponsors. We have Redline Oil, Center Force Clutches, MagnaFlow Exhaust, Meguiar's Car Care Products. And so with those guys, you know, anytime you drive your car, you need those products. Even, you know, the guys out there in the autocross to do a few laps, and they're detailing their car. So, we've got some great marketing partners, and we're going to have...
The truth is the autocross is the only kind of real racing where you can actually do that. Like, you can go out there, you can autocross, you can do a few laps, and then you can show your car again. Like, if we were up at any one of the tracks, if we were up at Button Willow or Willow Springs again, and John and I, we've done that together before, your car comes back as a mess.
Yes.
It comes back as a mess, for sure.
You know, back, and it's like when we were there, you know, you come back with the brakes on fire.
That's right, brakes on fire. There's dust storms up there. Like, it's a madhouse on the
fans
on the big
get to come back and go look at the car. I mean, yeah. That's the lunatic that spun out his, you know, his 65 Impala. I mean,
yes.
Really?
And we use soft cones, so it's, you know, there's really no cone damage on the cars. And no, it's true. Just at the slow speeds, everybody can have a blast. It's not that hard on a car. And you get all the sensations of driving a button wheel or a big track.
Well, I think
right in a parking lot.
Yeah, it's a good dose of humility for some guy who's been a smart mouth too, you know. It's perfect, right?
We have some of those guys out there today.
Well, Jimmy, what happened?
If you're going out there and you're competing, though, always watch for the Hotchkiss ringer. One of his guys, Aaron or Corey or one of those guys are out there in a Hotchkiss prepped car, and they know what they're doing. They know how to get
I love it. That's the best part.
First of all, it's the best test bed ever, by the way, for all of Hotchkiss's products is... If the car drives like shit, they can go out there and they can tune it up. These guys have gone to the track and taken a completely stock car, run it around a course, even Willow Springs or the autocross courses, and then in the middle of the day swapped on their suspension and then ran that car again to show people back to back how that car will do, how much better it is. So it's a great way to it's like taking the Pepsi challenge from back in the day. But it's
right.
Here's your stock Mustang, here's your Mustang on Hotchkiss, and they'll just do it all at one event. I don't know if you guys are doing that here today, but
we just have stock versions and all of our suspension on cars.
Yeah. And it's too hot to actually swap out the suspension today.
Yeah. Exactly. And then one of our new partners, Nitto Tire.
Yeah.
We're talking tires and talking air pressure because there's so much in the cars. People don't know what pressure you should run for an autocross like this. You can run high 20s in air pressure. And people, what? I'm not going to do that. But they try it and they get great grip because there's not a lot of lateral G on a car out here. There's a lot of braking and acceleration. And then on a track like, you know, Buttonwillow or big track, you'd run a lot higher pressure. So somebody can learn a lot. They can see the advantage of our suspension. And best of all, they can get behind the wheel and just have a blast.
So who's killing it out there? Is there one guy out there that's just sweeping up?
There are a couple of guys. There's a, I mean, this is a, what a crazy group. There's a, about a four-year-old Z06. That's really quick.
They always do well.
57 Apache pickup truck.
Oh, really?
Don't always do well.
Yeah.
It's a West Relishek truck. I mean, this truck is LS frame. It's a race car underneath.
Okay.
And then we've got a guy named Greg Nelson, 2013 fifth-gen Camaro. And they're all in the same second, and they're all within hundreds.
Oh, jeez.
So
wow.
There's going to be a lot of bragging rights later today.
Now, the biggest question is, who has the job of going out and straightening all the cones after everybody takes them out every run?
Oh, I do the announcing, and I'm constantly pleading with the drivers, please don't hit the cones. We make it wide. And even put chalk lines in, because every cone that goes away, they're in the corner, guys.
The guys got to run out
they're
there.
They're out there frying.
Yeah,
just because it's hot out, but other than that, hitting the cones.
No, there are warehouse, this weekend, there are warehouse guys out there.
Okay. That's awesome. And, so double duty.
Yeah, so
double
you want to go to California? Oh, yeah, man.
Exactly.
Do I get to go to the beach? Well, sort of.
It'll be sunny.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Hey, and where can they find the schedule for the rest of the year? Where online?
Yeah, they have to go to Hotchkiss.net, HOTCHKIS.net. And with all of our schedules right there, and just give us a call too.
And they can find out about all the Hotchkiss suspension, like I got on my El Camino sitting right behind us.
Oh,
you
Brad,
Brad, you need to take that car out.
Yeah,
I would like to, but they won't, you know, let me pull it in.
Yeah,
and out. I don't think so.
The doors are too small.
Yeah, the doors are too small.
You can't get out of this building.
So otherwise, I would. I'd be out.
Yeah,
there.
I know you would. Yeah.
When we were out there earlier, Pete, I was thinking, man, my El Camino's sitting there on display. It could be going through the cones, you know?
Yeah.
So, you gotta
I don't have big
warmed up.
I don't have big sway bars.
Well,
and
we can fix that right up for you.
You don't need any of that.
What's that?
You don't need any. Just get the car out there and go.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying, though. I mean, it's like I've got these huge sway bars, all this great Hotchkiss suspension, and then I've got the big bare brakes, and what's it doing? It's sitting in here in the air conditioning.
Yeah.
Boo-hoo. Boy, Brad, come on. What are you doing?
I'll tell you what, Brad. Well, we're all right here talking. Next year. Right?
Next year.
Next year.
Well, what do you mean next year? He's got 9 more events this year.
Well, we could lock this one in, though.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right?
Are you challenging me?
Oh. Am I challenging
you? Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
Okay.
All right. Well, then, Pete, you got to bring something and go.
You know what? I would count on you to bring me something.
And you got to bring something you own.
Yeah.
That was good. If you know me, I'd be happy. You know that.
Maybe the car.
That's a good one. I was going to ask him to bring me out some kind of a zippy Ferrari or something.
Yeah.
See, Matt had come out with, you know, something exotic or a BMW.
I wouldn't even know the nomenclature or the letters or numbers of the car. He has all that. I said, bring me out an LS zippity doo dah day.
Whenever you need the latest car fix, you just have to call up Matt and say, okay, what do you have this week?
What have you got? And I don't even know what to call it. Bring me out something red.
I brought a BMW M4 on the way here.
So he could be out there.
It's bright orange, but it's got a manual transmission.
Perfect. Ooh. For our autocross today.
That's great. Yeah. I couldn't get it through the gate. It was a hole. But we should wheel it out there and see what happens.
That'd be cool. Yeah. So, John, thanks so much. I know there probably has it just stopped while you've been over here because you're not there to run it?
No, it's still going.
Okay, good.
Looking at my watch.
It's mayhem right now.
Sitting up there.
Exactly.
John's going to grab some beer, and he's going to go back and go, sorry, guys, that interview ran long. Sorry. He's been in here drinking beer in the air conditioning.
I'm sure they're running the course backwards now. And
well, I did hear some guy, he came running by a minute ago, and he went, they're running two cars at a time now. I don't don't know if that's a problem.
Too but, wide? Is that okay?
Yeah.
You said the cones
like
were
they
wide.
Do, yeah, like when they run them like that.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's
as long as they're not starting them from the opposite end of the course.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, there you go. So,
yeah. All right. Well, John, thanks for coming by and being on Shift and Steer, man. Always good to have you by.
Pleasure. Yes,
you
sir.
Guys are great. And keep up the good work.
No, you keep up the good work. You guys are doing sweet. It's really great.
All right. Well, I think we've got somebody standing in the wings here, and it's Rich. Yeah, all Rich right. from MagnaFlow.
Thank you.
And we just gotta get his attention. Hey, Rich. We got a mic here open for you, man.
Rich Wade is from MagnaFlow.
Great, go for it.
Thank you.
All right.
And
thank you, John. So.
You can't see Rich, but if you did see Rich, you'd be like,
he came out of the jungle.
That's the dude from Overhaulin.
Yes.
And every other episode of every car show ever that has MagnaFlow exhaust, Rich Waitis is the guy that comes out there and does it. And Rich also built the crazy, I don't know what you guys call it, the revolver truck.
Yep.
Right? So explain a little bit about some of the hats you wear at MagnaFlow.
Well, I actually have been with the company about 13 years, which means I've had a lot of movement within the company. We've had a lot of growth. Started out in engineering. So I got to play with all the product, develop it, kind of turn it into what it is today, and then took that experience into sales training, trained our guys, and then took the next step out as training our customers, and that kind of pushed me more into a marketing role. So today I still wear a little bit of each of those pieces as needed in the company. So you might see me back behind the flow bench doing some diagnostics work on a car or working on the dyno, but then at the same time you might see me in the field fabricating, and then on TV being a spokesperson as well. So quite a bit of stuff.
So he does the custom exhaust as well for the TV stuff and for some select clients and things like that. So we actually had Rich on CarCast as well a while back, and he drives around this sweet MagnaFlow rig. It's an entire exhaust shop in the back of his truck. It's a complete portable exhaust shop. So you can basically get in the truck, roll anywhere, and build an entire exhaust system, and then just hit the road.
Yeah, I mean, as with anything with automobiles, especially with the caliber of cars that people are producing today, you got to have the right equipment. And, when you go to a location and it's a fab shop for chassis, they might make the best chassis in the world, but when it comes to cutting round tube and obviously fabricating what I do, I need my equipment that really works best for me. Otherwise, my quality is substandard. I don't want to be that one product on that special show vehicle or that personal asset car that somebody really wanted to build up that's not up to par.
Very cool. I mean, so you can go roll in anywhere, do what you need to do, and you're
back
done.
Down, roll out. Yep.
Yeah.
It's basically
wow,
a total
that's cool.
Shop.
I mean, we mentioned the TV shows, but you do this kind of stuff on some of the high end cars that you see at the car shows like this. You'll go over to the different hot rod shops and the guys that are building cars, because those cars are, hundreds of thousands of dollars and thousands of man hours into those cars. And it's you get to that point, and Pete knows this too, because Pete, obviously at SoCal is, well, what do? We either got to make it in-house, bring in a guy like Rich, because we're not going to take this car that is still wrapped in blue tape and everything else to a muffler shop to do it, right? So being able to do that. And then what's new at MagnaFlow? I mean, you guys are, you've got the catalytic converter market, you've got the performance market, and it's the whole thing about exhaust, this is what
blows
my mind, is the guys that make air filters and the guys that make exhaust have to come out with like 80,000 new product SKUs every year just to fit every single, because everybody wants to be like, I just want to know if I can get that product for my car. It's unlike any other product in the aftermarket where you got to just make tons of products.
The scope is really, really large. I mean, it's hard to believe, but on average, our tech center sees over 900 cars per calendar year. And these are for fitments. Some of these might just be, hey, let's take last year's model, check it out, and fit it. Before anything goes in the catalog, we want to make sure, does it still have the same acoustic properties? And with today's motors, one of the things that changes a lot is calibrations. They can move horsepower up and down. They can change where everything happens. And then if they do these things, is it going to have the same power? Is it going to have the same sound that people want inside and outside the car? So we go through a lot of actual on-car testing. And on top of that, we've got all of the other things we do from the emissions world, which is, hey, you know what? We're building four or five catalytic converters for some of the different cars, not just a single part, like in the performance exhaust world. And really, as those consumers get much more discerning, we find, like, for example, the current late model Mustang 2015, we'll have over 10 SKUs. We have them available in a black ceramic coating. We have them available in a cat-back, an axle-back, single-tip, double-tip, louder, quieter. So we can really address all the needs of every customer. So, yeah, it's a big task to take on that huge tidal wave of new applications every year.
You know, there's a lot going on, and what's interesting is you were talking about just bringing in cars just to see if the existing exhaust kits will fit. There's oftentimes the smallest little changes somewhere that the manufacturer doesn't tell you about. Mm-hmm. Maybe it even just slips through the cracks because of a supplier changed something. I was chatting with guys at Comp Cams, and we were talking about the new 2015 Mustang, and he goes, hey, here's the cams for the 2015 Mustang. I was like, it's the same motor. He's like, no, somewhere in the process, Ford changed the cam core by 1 millimeter, which required an entirely new cam set for that. So they had to just go back and reinvent and make a whole new thing, new parts from scratch. And I'm sure you guys run into that kind of thing all the time.
Yeah, you name it. It could be something as simple as a hanger, you know, and let's say that they got a better crash rating testing. Sometimes the hangers are perpendicular. Now they're going forward and backwards with the cars, and that's so they're under impact that they don't hit certain things. So they may have found out through 3 or 4 years, some DOT testing and whatnot, in the field that the, you know, let's say the exhaust under impact hits the gas tank. So they're going to make it so that those hangers don't allow it to move anymore. But it's still the same 2014, 2013 car, but inside and in the exhaust system, we're finding that there's a variation, and we'll have to update our customer and create a new part number and so forth.
Yeah. So what do you see as the next step for MagnaFlow? I don't know if it's 4 years from now or 8 years from now.
Sounds like a whole bunch of R&D. That's the next
step.
Sounds
like a lot of R&D. I don't know. I mean, because I'm just thinking off the top of my head, there's so many of these cars now have buttons on the dash where they control the exhaust and things like that. Is there a future where the first stage of a MagnaFlow exhaust modification isn't an exhaust muffler? It's a handheld tuner, and you can calibrate MagnaFlow tunes by altering the programming of a car or the exhaust valve opening of a car if it's electronic.
To some degree, that year was last year.
Okay.
I mean, today's average
vehicle. So it's
vehicle,
the past. Well, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, I mean, the average year vehicle that's coming out now has to meet so many stringent emissions requirements, but sometimes the exhaust back pressure component is actually what helps heat up the cat. So you're finding cars that actually have a very unusual, like a high idle with kind of a very fluttery kind of tone to them. They're actually shutting off most of the exhaust pressure to keep the heat trapped in the exhaust to light off those cats earlier. So if you change something like exhaust diameter, you're now interfering with the ability of the car to work with emissions correctly, and you may even get a check engine light.
I was going to say, it throws the computer off and everything. Man.
Yeah, so we're actually having
it could make it run like shit.
Yeah, and we have to do all kinds of testing now, which is basically taking that factory PCM, downloading of what it's doing to see if it's manipulating those things under different conditions. So we don't have a tuner per se, but we're doing exactly what you said, which is we're pulling all of that data off of those factory computers and reverse engineering it so that we can see if we're at the absolute least that we're not making something worse.
Yeah.
So the days of just flow through and no back pressure, that's history because of the computers.
Yeah, well, I mean, the big thing I think a lot of the when we talk about back pressure, really we don't need it anymore with today's modern vehicles. You're talking carburation had very limited windows where it was optimized for the cam and where airflow was optimized. But when you get into today's car with variable camshaft timing and you got pretty much exhaust controls that are mitigating pressure at low volume and high volume, such as the new Corvettes where the valves open depending upon throttle position, all of these things are helping the car work optimally over a larger, broader range. So as an exhaust system standard, minimizing back pressure is obviously something we're looking for. There's not that tuned amount of back pressure that people seem to say that, you know, is the old adage of a rule of thumb of building. It's not really there anymore.
And that's all that R&D center that you guys have that get all that information, put it in the magic pot, and come out with a great exhaust.
Yep, that's all part of that equation.
It's awesome. Well, you know, Rich, we appreciate you coming by. We'll have to have you on again sometime and talk about some specific projects and things like that. And where can we find you online?
Well, we're pretty easy to find. We're at www.magnaflow.com. You can find out all these great things like this O'Reilly's event. You can find all that on our social areas. So we're available on Instagram and Facebook. For the most part, just type it in a Google search and see what you get.
Cool. Well, Rich,
thanks so much for coming by. It's always fun to hang out with you. I always
appreciate
like to get
it,
really
man.
Nerdy about the
No, it's cool. I mean, it's awesome because you know it is all that information that really you think it's so simple, but you know I've been to the R&D center over there and it's just you just go, all this is going on.
There was a time where you were like, just pick the sound you want, and that's the muffler brand you went with. Now it's way more
complicated. What do you mean? There was a time you just bolted on some headers and then some pipes you found, you know? I mean, that was it.
Yeah. Good drill holes and things.
Yeah.
That's it.
So,
right on, Rich. Thank you
very
so
cool.
much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming by, man.
All right, what's Thank next? You. Are we?
We're gonna pull somebody in. I think Joe Benson's out here, man. And
Joe Benson out here, Matt.
All right, okay. Right on.
Oh my God! Look, here's all the troublemakers in one place.
Wow, see, you got a voice for radio.
I was just gonna
now we have a real voice.
Now we hear how the voices of ours are just, you know, we're podcasters, man.
That's all I got. See you later.
So where the hell is Uncle Joe Benson these days?
Doing middays at 100.3 The Sound in Southern California, or thesoundla.com if you want to go there. It's on the app around the world, one of the most transmitted simulcast streamed radio stations, classic rock stations in the world.
Now this is a fairly new deal, right?
For those of you
that
can't see the actual video of
this is interesting.
We have four people working on this microphone stand right here. This is a union job, okay?
Hi, everybody. Yeah. How you doing?
No, this,
there you
this
go.
Is definitely this, not just a union job, man. This is like what they do with the, guys that stand on the corner with the, on the shovels, you know.
That and selling oranges.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Am I revealing too much about this?
Whoa. Be nice.
So tell us about 100.3. I mean, first of all, for those of you who haven't been in the L.A. area and that listen to the podcast, Uncle Joe is a car guy who happens to be a radio personality. I mean, we see this guy at every car event, races, and
I stalk Pete.
You stalk Pete, but Pete, I mean, I met you through my business partner, Michael Anthony, and my buddy, and the thing was is that we kept running into you at music events, and then I'd see you at a car race, and then I'd go, and then finally it was like, you know, you're everywhere. You're at all the car and rock and roll events.
I'm very blessed.
Yeah.
I started out in the mid '60s, you know, when Pete was going through his fourth marriage, and
third.
I started out in the first time I was on stage '64 when the Beatles and the Stones and the Kinks, those were the bands. Other local bands could try and cover them. We were doing music constantly. Everything, every week, there was something brand new, unheard of before, throughout the '60s. And at the same time, cars were so bitching, I couldn't afford anything. I had a Renault Dauphine.
Whoa!
Or was it a Renault Dauphine?
It was a Renault.
Yeah, Renault. Yeah. And eventually, I got a 65 Valiant with one of the 500 they built with the engine of the with the V8 in it and the BorgWarner T10 that crushed my ribs. And I learned how to lose my license real quick. But that was the kind of hot rodding stuff. And being from the Midwest, every car that was new was going to be rusted out in 2 or 3 years.
Right,
so
right.
There was new cars, all bitching new cars the entire, bitching music the entire time. And I got into radio in '68 because, well, I couldn't make any money in cars. I thought I could make money in radio, but that's no, Mom. I'll be able to pay the rent next. And I've been involved in music, and from the very basic, everybody we deal with, Michael, I've known since.
Yeah, he since, speaks so highly of you, you know.
And we did a thing a couple of weeks ago with Jimmy Page. And I'm a contemporary in the music business with a lot of these people, and there's never any bullshit involved. I don't care how many times somebody had their blood changed, Pete. So,
did you say there was no bullshit in the music business?
No, for me.
Oh, for you?
But yeah. That's what I'm talking with Billy Gibbons many times. I'm six or seven days older than Billy and six or seven older than Paul Rodgers, and the three of us together are very interesting.
Yeah.
And talking, Billy's always the same attention span for everything, and I've been very lucky to be around that kind of stuff.
You guys share the same octave in your speaking voices.
I do in there, Peter. Yeah.
I'm just going to go out and say that Billy's made a lot more money doing his voice.
Yes.
Real nice, Matt.
Yes.
Real nice.
Yes.
Hey, now tell us about, you know, the new 100.3 The Sound, and so you're on there now. It's back to the roots of rock and roll, but you're doing some other things, and what I want to preface this with is that in today's internet age, it's like everything else. Anybody in the world can tune into that, right?
There might be royalty problems on music in Europe.
Yeah.
But other than that, yes, we're one of the biggest streaming radio stations, the most successful classic rock station there is in the world at this point. And that's what we feature is music, and one of the main calling cards for the radio stations. We don't really play many commercials. if the competition ran, what were the promos? 873 more commercials last week than we did. You know, well, we played that much more music along the way, and I'm very lucky, and it's the music that I grew up with, that all of us grew up with.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, except for one or two songs, a lot of it is this best stuff that's sorted out, like we were talking about.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's like the guys from the Wrecking Crew talking about you recorded 200 of the top five hits ever. You know, you should get more recognition of that. Well, for those 200, there were 5,000 bombs. Yeah. And just like, you know.
Yeah.
And, but the musicians, I get to play with that. We do interview stuff on the air. And then I've been the voice of many racing. I'm not talking about myself way too much here, am I?
That's what you're on the. You're being interviewed.
You're being interviewed.
It's an interview, yeah.
That
Joe.
Works, yeah. Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. So I got my shoes.
It's the PR person that keeps handing you crib notes. That's what I'm worried about.
I've been racing. I race just about everything that I've ever been around. We have a road race car that's on jack stands right now. And it looked good with your logo on the side.
Yeah, it would.
And my partner, Randy Balow, has been running drag cars, 63 Corvette right now. He's won national championships. He's won division championships and national races. I'm not allowed in the car because... he can win. And
so you don't touch the car. You just
I stand
you
next
admire
to the car.
The car.
Yes, people come up. What, Randy owns it. He drives it. He works on it. And I talk about it.
That's
really,
good.
Do you need anything else? Yeah. I'm eye candy. That's sad. That's very, very sad. I'm really. So I've always been around cars and the voice of the Auto Club Speedway at, in Fontana since they opened in 97. And shout out to Randy Fan, the other longest running employee. Did they pay you? Oh, that's good. It's a good thing. So that's a big difference.
Well, he got a new hat.
Yeah. And we get a shirt.
Oh.
A nice shirt. Really nice
Really?
Shirt.
You get shirts and hats for doing that?
So I get to deal with race car drivers who are much different now than they were 20 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And rock stars who are much more cognizant of mortality now than they were 20 years
20
ago.
20 years ago.
At least some of them are.
No, most of them are.
Most of them. Uh-huh. And most of the musicians know you want to get the story out straight. We'll sit there and talk about things and go into great depth. I was talking to... Jimmy Page about when they first started and they all gathered around the drums, him and Plant and John Paul Jones and around Bonham's drums. Did you have stage monitors or you couldn't hear? He's going, well, nobody ever asked about stage monitors. He sits there and says, actually, we were watching each other. We couldn't hear much, but it was more important to see. I could tell when John Paul Jones was about to do something, what he's going to, and I'd work off of that. And we could tell Robert was playing off of us and we could see what John Bonham was doing before anybody could hear it. So it was a very visual band. And that's the kind of stuff that I just live for.
Oh, those kind of stage monitors. I thought you meant like the roadies that were looking for the good-looking girls down in the front row. Not that kind of stage monitor.
It wasn't that difficult in 68. Trust me, I was a roadie.
It's interesting because it sounds like what you just described was the band plays and they just all stare at each other while they're doing
it. They're all
like,
what
are you going to do next? What are you going to do next?
That's really
when they, but you can watch them turn to the drummer. And you can see it in the early the early film.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they eventually got to the point where they couldn't hear, so they had to have bigger monitors. Same thing with race drivers. I've known Jimmy Johnson since he was 14 or 15 running the Mickey Thompson series, among other people. And he's the same guy today. He just is worth more money, and he's got far more trophies than he did back then. And we sit down there. We do a thing every year for charity when he comes to town for the Jimmy Johnson Foundation. I think last year he raised $45,000 or something like that. And it's just fun talking as a human being back and forth as opposed to, so what did your publicist say, Pete? What are you talking about this time? Brad, what are you selling?
We're all selling something. You know, it's the internet. It's corrupted us all.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've been very blessed that I get to do all this stuff. And
hot rods and rock and roll when it breaks it down, right?
There you go.
Yeah, that's great.
So what's the studio that you showed me pictures of? Tell us about that.
We call it Uncle Joe's Garage, and it's thesoundla.com/garage is the easiest way to tell you to get there. We're also all over Facebook. Uncle Joe's Garage is the Facebook page, and it's growing by leaps and bounds. We have a studio. California Car Cover is our the outfitters, as we call it. We're powered by that.
Oh, really?
So a lot of the decorations and such. We had Jack Beckman, Funny Car Champion.
Yeah.
Jack, him and John Force. There's more words per square millimeter than but I've known Jack for a long time. And, yeah, truly. And you can tell. So he was in. We had one of the Top Fuel slicks. Now, this is basically it's a video shoot, but it's basically a radio show. And we have comedians. We've got Vince Neil is in for the Grand Prix. Hopefully Michael Anthony will come off his surfboard soon. Did you ever ride in a boat with him?
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty damn dangerous.
He got me into boats.
Oh!
I can tell you some stories about that. That's...
Yeah,
we'll have to save that for another show. Boat stories with Michael Anthony.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, he just got a new boat himself. He got a nice big cruiser for down in Newport, and we took it offshore to see what it would do not too long ago, and it was fun.
So that's why he has to go to work again.
Yeah, poor guys.
Well, you know, if you're going to buy a 47-foot fountain with three engines in it, that's a lifetime of work.
Well, bass players have to work out. You know, they got big forearms for playing
the
bass.
You're going to need a bigger forearm than he thought.
He's got to have those forearms now to, you know, be pulling in the rope to get the boat up to the dock and everything like that, mopping the decks.
I think it's just the fuel cost alone.
Oh my God.
Yeah, fill it up.
Yeah.
That was $3,000. Yeah.
So where can we find you? I mean, everybody out there in the internet world that's listening to Shift and Steer, tell us where they can find Uncle Joe Benson.
100.3 The Sound or thesoundla.com is where you find the stream. And from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., the features, I have a syndicated show called Off the Record that's based on all the interviews I've done with rock stars and playing their music. Mm. We do a feature called the 10 of 10 where we take a particular year and then we play songs proper to that. 1974 for Monday, if you can remember 74.
Yeah,
that's a challenge.
If you were there, never mind.
Is it a little hazy, Pete?
74?
Yeah.
That was a good one.
The less you remember is the better of the year.
He doesn't remember the pantyhose.
No, the 74.
So I'm there, and we're on web. UncleJoe.com is another place to go. And
cool.
It's great fun. I'm
very
blessed to be there.
Is that an archive that you're running? I mean, is this all new stuff, or is this stuff that's been archived?
Everything I'm doing on the air is live. Off the record, the interview stuff is archived.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
I mean, we talk, depends on who's in town if I'm talking to someone. I just did talk with Jimmy Page 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, see, that's stunning.
So that's
good
that's
for you. I'm really excited for you.
Billy Gibbons, one of my favorite people to sit down and.
Oh, I talked to him for an hour day before yesterday.
Could you understand anything he said?
Absolutely. And that's, yeah.
It was about what he wanted done in his car.
Yes, because it was all car talk.
Yes.
I love that.
I mean, you know, I want to talk music. Nah. Cars? Oh, yeah.
Okay. I love that.
On the road. He's on the road. And so when he's on the road, that's when he's at his very best about designing and wanting and doing. And can we do this? Can we do that? I mean, it's...
Pete, you and I have had this conversation. And, Joe, you've probably had the same thing. It's the rock guys that are into cars. They want to talk cars.
Oh, yeah.
They don't want to talk rock. They want to talk cars.
You know? One of the things I love about Billy, of course, don't know him as well as you know him, Pete. Thank the Lord. Just the same. Yeah. I've known him for a very long time. And my son is now 15 going on 16, a guitar player that Steve Miller tapped 5 years ago. And Billy is aware of that, and I've talked to him quite a bit. And they share guitars and talk. And when they played with Jeff Beck at the Greek Theater.
Oh.
And right beforehand, Billy's, come on back, get back here. And he's in there in the dressing room, and of course the kids have all seen that. And my daughter's talking with his niece or nephew, or I don't know what the relationship, but there were two bassoon players discussing playing bassoon in Jimmy's, Billy's dressing room.
Dressing room, yeah.
And he says something to Jeremy about how's the bowling hanging up, what strings you using, that's good. And he looks at me and he says, how's the Prius? I said, it's got flames. He says, of course it does. Did you take the plastic covers off it so you can see the blood? I have, absolutely, that's what we did it for. And he says, that's the best part of it because we can do it. I'm like, dude knew. We're talking about Priuses and how you flame a Prius, and we're talking about guitars and bassoons. I mean,
people don't, when they first, in fact, Alex today said, I'm absolutely shocked every time I talk to him how he is 180 from what he appears to be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because he can really lay. I mean, if he wants to impress somebody, the guy had better stand by. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
I love it. Yeah. And we're all very lucky to be able to move in those. And if we can share some of the stories and share some of the insight and going on stuff, that's.
Oh, we got some stories.
Yeah, that's right. Hi. Thank you for.
Hey, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for coming by.
We're tuning in and listening to you. Thanks for coming in so that you can tune in and listen
so
to us.
I'm so happy for your success, my friend.
Thank you.
I'm serious.
There's a lot to be said for hard work. Yeah. And
Uncle Joe Benson, a legendary L.A., just a guy who's hot rods, rock and roll. I mean, we run into him everywhere, and everybody knows you. That's what's cool.
Can't get away with shit.
I know.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, thank you again. Hey, what do you guys say? We round this episode out with a chat and scat. Because I see somebody standing out here.
Chat and scat.
Looks like he's been,
you've been eating,
drinking some beers and walking around. And let's see if we can grab him. Hey, Pin, do you want to come over and say a few words? Looks like he's going to come up here. We're getting a mic on him. So, pindidit.com.
What's happening, guys?
What's going on, man? You enjoying the Street Machine Muscle Car Nationals?
We are indeed. We are indeed.
Now, you brought a Chevelle out here, right? Tell us about that thing.
Yes, sir. It's a 1968 actual Malibu that we did a full frame off build on.
So what kind of motor, what kind of stuff's done to it?
We did a frame off on it, did a custom chassis underneath it. It's got a Kenny Bell supercharged LS2 in it with a 6-speed TCI trans.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's bright blue.
It is Chevy Arrival blue.
Yes, it arrives fast. The weather out there today is 96 degrees, and I say, drinking a little beer, partaking. Are you just walking around, checking things out?
Yeah, we're just walking around out here today, checking out some of the finer muscle cars around Southern California that we've seen.
Cool. Tell us, kind of fill everybody in. Pin Did It. What's the deal? What do you do?
Pin Did It is the brand that we started about 17 years ago, building cars and kind of the lifestyle. And when we came to the West Coast from Detroit, we wanted to do something a little different. So we incorporated our entire lifestyle from cars to bikes to off-road trucks all into one platform. So it's not just, you know, your typical hot rod shop, as we tackle a lot of different projects and bring all of our lifestyles into it. So all the type of vehicles that we build aren't just one genre. They're all really mixed media and kind of how I feel of how I see things. And I build the spec for the owner of how I see them as a person, not how they see themselves or what their friends see them as, or, oh, their buddy has one just like it. We don't take builds like that.
Yeah, because you build muscle cars, you build slam Cadillacs, you build trucks, whatever floats your boat at the time, right?
That's exactly it. And we try to do things, like I said, that are very mixed media and not like you're going to park next to another one that's just like it with a different set of wheels, you know?
Now go in a little bit farther, because tell everybody about your alter ego, because you do a lot of, you know, club promoting and stuff like that.
We do. Another big part of our business was growing up in the nightlife industry. Growing up in Vegas, throwing huge club events, throwing big outdoor festivals. So, like I said, we kind of incorporated all of our lifestyle from, you know, if you're into cars, you're into bars, you're into motorcycles. So we kind of incorporated it. And 16 years ago at SEMA was my first show. It was 99. And I wanted to throw a little get together from doing big nightclub stuff for all of my sponsors to thank them for helping us build our first show car. And, you know, the first year we had 13 people there in a little get together. And the next year people started asking, well, where's the party at this year? Oh, well, we're going to have it over here at Venus of the Venetian. And, you know, next year was 300 people. We're like, well, all right. Because what I didn't realize is that, you know, all the people that travel that are in the automotive world didn't have friends in Vegas to say, hey, this is where you go. So they kind of, you know, had to get their suit on and get dressed up and go stand in line to some overhyped hip-hop club in Las Vegas, which wasn't our style.
He saw us, Matt.
I was there.
Yeah.
That's it. You end up standing in the line and hanging out with people that aren't car people, ain't your style. So we started taking over venues, and now we're taking over entire casinos and branding them around our lifestyle and our feel, and bringing in groups and acts from, you know, our growing up cruising days, and bringing them to entertain our crowd. So you're not just standing in a nightclub in Vegas, because, you know, we're in Southern California. We're only a couple hours from Vegas, so we're kind of spoiled by it. But a lot of these people in our industry come from the Midwest and the East Coast. They get to Vegas and they want to experience Vegas.
Yeah.
And we wanted to have a good experience during the SEMA week rather than the typical, let's rake you for whatever money we can get out of you. You know, $300 to get into a nightclub is ridiculous. And also, we wanted people to come in their Dickies and their t-shirt and their ball cap and come in and have fun. It's about the experience rather than about how much you're going to spend to come sit in a bar, you know.
They've been at SEMA. They've been on the show floor all day. They want to go have fun, see, and talk about what they saw, not care so much about, like you said, waiting in line to get into that place. You guys put on the party that it's for those guys.
And that's it. This is, like I said, will be our 16th year.
Where's it at?
It's going to be at the Palms Hotel and Casino in Vegas. We literally rebrand the whole casino from the marquee out front to custom cars inside on the casino floor. They're very accommodating there and really get our lifestyle.
Yeah, it's a good hotel to do that in. It's good. Good. I'm not telling you. You know it's a good choice.
Yeah, we've done it at a couple of the properties for years to come. And this place really gets the idea. They rebrand all the gaming tables. tables, all the staff, like they really incorporate all of our lifestyle with it. And it's not just for Penn Did It as a brand. It is also for all of our sponsors that come on with us and help us with our cars each year. So we get, you know, available branding on places that people in our industry can't get. You can't go rebrand a casino in Vegas during SEMA week. SEMA themselves can't do it. So it's been an anomaly, and they've tried to chase down everything we've done for years on end, and they're still a couple steps behind trying to still copy on what we've been doing. So.
Well, we're kind of copying it this year. We're doing the Timber Top Bar. It's way on the other side of town, but we're going to have the Shift and Steer party there. And it's
We're the only ones going.
First announcement of it.
Yeah.
Well, I was bringing you guys on with me this year.
No, I'm just
there's going to be four of us there.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, we had a grassroots movement in our company of an open house. Uh-huh. Started out with 13 people, and now we have 5,000, right?
Yeah.
And it's a monster, and there's 500 cars and all that stuff, and we have no control over it. If we told them we weren't going to have it, they'd all show up anyway.
Yep.
And what you're experiencing, what we experience, outsiders can't make that happen because it's grassroots.
They can't. It's grassroots, it's organic, and it's actually grown from like-minded people that are into the same thing. That, you know, you get to go to a place. Like I said, we grew up from 13 people to 5,000 as well.
Yeah.
And it's one of those situations that, you know, when people don't get invited, they're bummed out. And it was funny, a couple years ago, we had Everlast play at a little place in the Hard Rock called Vinyl. And the door guy came to grab me, and his first thing, he's like, hey, there's a guy from TV out front. I'm like, yeah, what am I saying? There's 5,000 people trying to get a place that holds 500. He goes, no, it's the guy, the TV guy. I'm like, that doesn't narrow it down. So I walk out, and Chip Foose is out front, flags me down, and he's like, hey, you didn't bring me my pass in the booth today. I'm like, and he still came. I was like, so I grabbed it, and everyone's like, that's the guy, and I bring him in, and I untuck his shirt, and I put a PBR in his hand. I said, relax, you're amongst friends. And it was one of the very first times I could see the look on his face as he knew he didn't have to be obligated to be something.
Right, exactly.
He just got to hang out and watch Everlast and have fun with car guys.
Right.
And I laughed because people took pictures of us, and we both have our phones out looking, oh, what did you do this year? Oh, I got this. And we're looking at cars on our phones like we all do in the middle of the bar.
Yeah, so other people who would try and emulate what you do and what we do, they can't do it. Because it doesn't happen from inside.
It's organic. What we do, you can't try.
Yeah, what we do is from the inside out, not from the outside in.
And that's exactly how it is. And we've tried to grow the industry and help and bring people along with us.
So we don't need to go to the other end of town. We can just,
We're just going to go to his. I've been to his parties, and they kick ass. I mean, they do. They rock. But we got to wind this up because we're getting to the end of the show. But I got one last question for you. So is your next project car a Buick Grand National?
My next project car is a Buick Grand National.
It better, because it's growing dust in my garage.
It is definitely the next project on the list. And
you should promise.
That's a very special car to me, so you know exactly how that whole thrill.
I know. My wife said,
there's a time limit on this, Penn, because if you don't come get it soon, I'm going to go get it.
Yeah.
Oh, now we're talking.
I've told him.
I've been telling Brad for
what year is
like,
it? What year is it?
It's an 84. First year, leather interior.
Yeah,
and,
because if you don't, Gary Lorenzini, the guy that has that black car, wants one. So
I'm bringing the trailer over tonight.
We got pressure from everywhere.
Actually, my wife said to me, she goes, watch, Penn's going to want to come over and get that this weekend because there's no way to get to it. It's the one weekend where there's a car that's on Gojacks behind it, and she goes, watch, he'll call and go, hey, I'm ready to come get it. And I'll be like, yeah, that ain't going to happen this weekend.
Yeah, no, we both touch base every couple months. We're like, hey, let's do it this week. Oh, well, this week I got to be here. How about next week? Well, next week I got to be there.
Yeah, so it's the worst schedules in the world, but we'll make it happen one of these days, and he'll pull that dust pile out that says Buick on the side. And
I can't wait to get her get her back and reliving and cruising again. That's a car I've dreamed about since I was six
years old. Tell the quick story on that. I own the car, and you found out about it.
Yeah, the quick rundown out of it, there's a gentleman named Tony Corey in Mesa, Arizona, and he's a Buick dealer. And when I was a kid, my grandfather owned the Yamaha dealership, Valley Yamaha, on Main Street in Mesa, Arizona, and Tony Corey was his best friend. And I remember as a kid, you know, I was 6 years old in 84, going down to the Buick dealer, and it looked like Knight Rider. It was all blacked out. It was one of the two cars that could fit on the showroom floor, and that was the car that was I remember as my first hot rod I wanted, you know, more than anything. And
I always thought about it, and what, 2 years ago, I see my friend Brad here post a picture on his Facebook saying he's thinking about selling his Grand National, and I knew the building out back was Tony Corey Buick. So I heard and called him up, and he's like, yeah. I go, this is the one that was on the showroom floor. He said, yeah, absolutely. I was like, how does this work out? And, you know, he's done business with Michael Corey and been around the family for a long time. He's like, I bought the car from the guy who bought it for his wife, and she was a little too fast for her. He goes, I ended up buying it. He goes, I drove it till 88 and parked it back in Tony Corey Buick, and it sat there up until 2 years ago. He goes, I put it on the trailer, brought it out, and now it sits in my garage out here in California. I said, man, I got to come see it. So I went out, looked at it. I was like, that is the car.
No, let me add on to this, because the garage door was opening at my house, and I don't think it was even a foot up. And he goes, I'll take it.
Yeah.
And I go, we haven't even seen it yet. He goes, that's right, I'm taking it.
Yeah. And Brad's like, damn it, I underpriced
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was one of those things like that, yep, that's the car. I have to buy it, because it's one of those deals that you never get the chance to get that first hot rod again. And for the fact that it became available, it was the car.
Especially that car.
And my friend had it, and it meant so much to both of us that it's one of those, it's never going anywhere. I have to have it. And by all means, it was coming home with me.
See, Pete, I'm one of these guys that never sells anything. The El Camino I had in high school. My 67 Chevelle, first car I ever had, I still own it. So all these cars, I keep collecting them. The Buick, I said, okay, something's got to go. And he and I both had gone to the Buick dealership, sat in the seat. I was looking to buy. You were with your grandfather, right?
Yes, sir.
And so I couldn't afford the car back then. I mean, the Grand Nationals were so expensive. So I went over and bought a Monte Carlo SS because it was less expensive. My neighbor comes pulling up in the Grand National like a week later, and I'm like, ah, oh, you son of a bitch, you know? And 6 months goes by, and I see him put a for sale sign on it, and I go, why are you selling that? What's wrong with it? And he goes, my wife says it's too hot to have in Arizona, a black car with a sunroof. So I bought it. I bought it there on the spot. And the first thing my wife said is, okay, we have a brand new Z28, a Monte Carlo SS, and a Grand National now. What's with not affording the Grand National? I go, oh, no, we're going to sell your car. Don't worry, babe.
Yeah. So, yeah. One's got to go. It's unfortunately going to be yours because we're getting the Grand National.
Yeah, right? but then, like you said, I drove it all the time. It was my driver. And then an 88, parked it, and one's got to go so my 67 Chevelle can go and you can get a Grand National. So
I can't wait. That car is going to be one of those things that you just remember as a kid. Like, I remember being six, sitting in the driver's seat of it, playing cars. Like,
yeah.
It was a thing. And at the time, Tony Corey had the pre-production GNX, which his son tells me he still has. And T3 told me when I was out there, he's like, hey, you got to get that car and get it out here and cruise with my dad before.
Yeah.
Before it's any later. I said, man, and you are absolutely right, because that's been a dream since I was a little kid. So we have to go out there together.
We will.
Cruise with the
It'll course. Be fun. Hey, and speaking of something gotten to go, unfortunately, we got to go. Another show's up. And everybody, Matt, you want to hit our websites?
Yeah, check us out. We're on all of our social media. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter, all at Shift Steer Media.
And don't forget, pindidit.com. Yeah, go there, check him out, see everything that he's doing. We are going to have a whole bunch of stuff coming up in the upcoming show. We're going to have another episode here that we're going to be recording. So there'll be two episodes from out here. So please go on, like us, and as we always say, please subscribe on iTunes. Pete?
Hey, it's good to be back.
It's good to have you back, my man.
Oh, got to tell you.
Matt, thanks for driving over from L.A.
Right on.
Pin, thanks for coming on.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for waiting around, man.
Anytime.
All right.
Sorry about
Shift and steer. We'll be back at you.